All right. Carnivore Soldier coming at you from Austin, Texas. And today we have another video in our podcast and video series called The Carnivore Way, in which we highlight YouTube content creators that are in the carnivore lifestyle. In this episode, we're talking to UK carnivore guy, Paul, all the way from the UK across the pond. And let me bring Paul and let him introduce himself real quick. Hey, good morning, Paul.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Why don't you go ahead and do a quick introduction of yourself and just tell us who you are, where you're from, what do you do, and you can start into your carnivore story.
First of all, thanks a lot for having us on. Really do appreciate it. And I love the idea of getting carnivore's perspectives from different parts of the world. So great idea. I'm Paul, as you said. I'm 46-year-old from the UK. Most people from the UK will be able to tell by my accent that I'm from up in the northeast of England, but I actually live down closer to London area now in a county called Essex. Been here for about 9 years now, love it here. Got a nice job in a busy airport nearby. And yeah, I started carnivore, I think it's day 73 now, not too long, still early days really, but I have seen benefits already. Really enjoying it. I found it originally through a YouTube channel. I watch a lot of Jordan Peterson videos, and I think a clip came up of him talking to Joe Rogan about his experience and his daughter's experience, just eating nothing but meat. I'm one of these people, I do like, if I get the idea into my head, I do a lot of research on it, which I did. And I think one of the first people I found was Ken Berry, watched a load of his videos. And for me, it just made sense. Compared to what I was eating, it just made perfect sense that that is something the human body should be absorbing. So I thought, I'd give it a try for 30 days. I wanted to do a minimum of 30 days, but ideally minimum of 90. So I'm almost at my 90-day mark. But yeah, it's going really well. I can't complain.
So you don't strike me as a guy who was heavily overweight when you started. Are you doing? What's your reasons for doing this? Like, why did you start this?
Yeah, in a way, because I'm doing a YouTube channel, I'd love some massive story about being severely depressed or massively overweight, because I think that would be a great story to get out. But really, I'm just a normal guy. I've never been massively overweight. I think my biggest was about 13 years ago. I used to drive buses and I got up to about 15 stone. So I don't know whether you use pounds, but at 14 pound to a stone and I was 15 stone, so that was me heaviest. I'm now down to about, I think I'm about 167 pounds. So yeah, weight wise I'm not really too worried about it, but I did suffer from high blood pressure. I've been on high blood pressure tablets for quite a while. The day I started the carnivore diet, I stopped taking them and I started putting salt on everything, which my doctor told us not to do, and your blood pressure's come all the way down to normal and stayed normal. So yeah, fantastic with that. But I think the main reason I did it is I've got young kids. I've got one due in December as well. And I just want to, I think this is a big enough reason for anybody, is to prevent them in the long run. So when you're in your 50s and 60s, 70s, whenever it is, when you start getting major problems, then hopefully this will give us more time or completely prevent it from happening in the first place.
Yeah, being a guy who's in his 50s, I'm 57. So I definitely relate to that, because that's what happened to me. I was an athlete all my life and a soldier and a military guy. So I was always pretty fit. I was never like totally bad out of shape until I hit my 50s, I think, or late 40s, early 50s. Then my body stopped responding to exercise. I actually played rugby. So one of your sports there. I never played soccer, but I played rugby. Yeah. I was second row for our university, Michigan State University, and second row for a military team. And I had a blast doing that. It was a great sport. But yeah, so I'd done my whole year, my whole life, I had worked out and had good response. And then I knew what my body responded to exercise like. But then when I hit my late 40s, early 50s, my body didn't respond the same. And I started sliding down and injuries started piling up. And I just, it was just not good. And then by the time I retired from the Army, I couldn't even run anymore. I was on what's called a profile, walking profile. So during my PT test, I would actually speed walk, which is still pretty hard, but it mentally messes with you. You can't run anymore. You're like, am I ever going to run again? And I never thought I would. I thought my running days are over. And now I'm out sprinting and I'm running, because this is an amazing diet. So it sounds to me like you more did a preventative and also an optimization protocol for the carnivore diet.
Yeah, 100%. Just the other things that I heard about, like regarding skin conditions, I used to get quite a bit of dry skin around my nostrils and on my cheeks. That cleared up as well. And obviously, like you say, the older you get, the injuries can start to creep in. And I noticed I was getting like a slight pain in my left knee, which I damaged my cartilage when I was a child. And the doctor said, when I was doing my basic training for the army, he said, because I was getting pains in it then, and he said, when you get older, you could really have problems with that, because I've got like a big bump on my knee. So with my current job, I'm doing a lot of walking, and I would sometimes fail it. That's another thing that's gone. So it's just little things now, but big things in the future. Another thing is sleep-wise. I don't sleep as long as I used to, but I don't feel as tired, like it's as if I don't need it as much,
Yeah, like when I wake up, like I'm not drinking coffee right now, which is totally not the way I was. I do occasionally drink coffee still, but actually I think it's causing an inflammation response, like Dr. Chafee says, because when I do, I actually feel some aches that have been gone. Like in my right thumb, and this is an ammo loading thumb. I don't know if you've ever, but when you load your ammo, you have to. So I had an ammo loading thumb injury from doing multiple reps, and then my left ankle. And when I do drink coffee, I notice a flare up like that day. And then if I stay off it, it goes away. So I think I might just drop coffee altogether, which it's unfortunate because I did like coffee.
Yeah.
I can be without it, though. It's not worth it.
Yeah, of course. Some people can get away with drinking it fine. I've never been a massive coffee drinker because caffeine used to give us like blurred vision and pains behind my eyes if I had more than one cup a day. So I've quite often drank decaf, and I still have, when I'm particularly at work, I'll have one or two of them. But it doesn't seem to affect his touch wood. We'll see.
Yeah, that's cool. So yeah, so you probably, now what you said, the first video you saw Jordan Peterson. I'm a Jordan Peterson follower too, which is interesting because I think a lot of people, people that follow Jordan Peterson are into critical thinking, right? Which means they have an open mind. They can hear, they can be challenged. Their ideas and their thought process can be challenged, and they're open to thinking a different way. And that I think that's why a lot of people watch Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson, because they are those kind of guys, right? And I saw the Jordan Peterson and the Joe Rogan when he did his 30 days on it, when he had his vitiligo went away and he lost his weight in 30 days. And I was like, well, I know this guy doesn't BS anybody. He has no reason to. He's not making money, so he's just telling the truth.
Yeah.
And same with Jordan Peterson. He's not selling something, not selling his carnivore book or anything, right? He's just talking about his experience and his daughter. So I was like, wow. And then I had actually used keto when I was active duty, and when I was training for a school, you had to do a PT test when you got to the school to show that you could physically do it. Like I was telling you about that warrant officer school earlier, when we were off camera. You have to be able to pass a certain physical. So I would get ready for schools with keto, and it worked to a degree. And just like every other diet I'd done, I was a guy who struggled with weight when he got in the late 40s. So I did several different diets. I did the keto. I did the intermittent fasting, alternate day fasting. I did all these things, and I fell off all of them. Initially, I always had great results on all of them. Every one of them, great results initially, but I couldn't stick to them. They were just way too hard. This is the first way of eating I've ever done that's completely sustainable. And I started like you. I just said, hey, I'm going to do 30 days and see what this does and see if it's BS, but I'm going to do it all out. I'm not going to ease my way in. I'm just going to do it day one. Boom. Like you did, no meds or whatever. I'm in day one. Like Cortez, when he burned his ships, when his 600 soldiers got over to the New World, that's what I'm doing. There's no going back. We're going to do it. And it's either going to work or it's not, but it's not going to be because I didn't try. It's going to be because it's a scam, or it's just going to work. And it worked. So then after 30 days, I'll do another 30 and evaluate, and then another 30 and evaluate. And after 90 days, I was like, all right, this is completely sustainable. And you're almost there. This is the best thing I've ever done. It has literally changed my life. And I can see it going forward where my mental clarity, in addition to the physical things, my mental clarity cleared up amazingly, which I didn't even know I had mental clarity issues. I really didn't. I thought I was operating I've always been an optimistic person. So I thought I was operating pretty well, but it's night and day now that I'm on this, my attitude, my motivation level. I get up and I do dishes and I like it. And I never liked doing dishes. I actually enjoy doing stuff like that. I mowing the lawn. I enjoy it. It's weird. I didn't do that. Tell me about your physical and mental effects. Besides, I saw you talked about the pain going away and your sleep. Is there anything else physically? And then what has your mental change been like?
Physically wise, I think I've noticed I don't do a lot of exercise, but when I've started doing a little bit recently, and when I've done it in the past, just basic things like press-ups, sit-ups, just trying to build up my upper strength. And I've done it in the past, the next day or the day after, I felt aches, pains in my muscles. But on this diet, it's like there's nothing, there's no aches, there's no pains. I can feel like I can do more than I would have done when I was on a high carb, high sugar diet by a mile. So physically, yeah, that's and feeling more energetic in general, that's definitely changed. Mentally, I've always been quite good mentally. I don't believe I've ever struggled with anything too severe. Obviously, everybody gets times in their life what's a bit rough and you feel down. But mentally, I think a bit like you, just when I'm at work, I've got a lot of work to do on the computer, meetings as well, things like that. And I just feel like I'm a bit more switched on, a bit more clear with what I've got to say, a little bit less stuttery. I do still do it sometimes. Sometimes when I'm making my YouTube videos, there's loads of edits. But I'm definitely better than I used to be. So overall, mentally and physically, it's a plus.
Yeah, I used to talk about down days. So I would get days sometimes where I'd wake up and it'd be perfectly beautiful day out, and I'd just be down, and I don't know why. And I just wonder why. I thought, well, I guess I'm just down. And I don't get those anymore. Those little blues days are gone. I didn't have deep depression or anything, but I would have days where I'd feel a little depressed. And I just don't have those anymore.
I'll tell you what still does affect us a little bit. I don't know why. It's affected us my whole life. But when the winter's coming in and the dark nights,
yeah,
I still get it's not like a depressed, but I still get a little bit down that the light nights are going, the summer's going. I still feel that a little bit.
Yeah, that's maybe that has to do with the circadian rhythm. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I served on a submarine in the Navy. So I went to a place where there was no sun.
Yeah.
There's no blue sky. And the furthest thing you could focus on with your eyes was 100 feet. There's nothing beyond there. So when you got out of a submarine after being on for 60, 90 days, you couldn't focus on things far away for a while till your eyes readjusted because they had not been used. And it was always light where you worked and always dark where you slept. And we worked on 18-hour rotating shifts. So you did 6 hours on, 12 off, six on, 12 off. Well, that's not a 24-hour day. So one day you wake up and it's breakfast for morning. The next day you wake up, it's dinner for morning. And the next day you wake up, it might be lunch. It was all messed up. And
yeah. Did they provide you with things like vitamin tablets for like lack of sunlight and things
they
like
did
that?
Not. We would either bring our own or we would have, and the longest mission I do is 96 days. So it's still a long time, but we would have the sun lamps we'd bring in and use on ourselves sometimes to try to get some natural light. I don't know how effective they were. And I'm sure we were all vitamin D deficient. They did not give us any of that. It's crazy. And we smoked. We did everything bad this is back in the 80s. We actually smoked on the submarine. Everyone did. I smoked Marlboro Reds. I smoked a couple packs a day. Back when I smoked, I quit after the Navy, but yeah, it was not a super healthy environment, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I know what it's like. I grew up sort of my prime years when I was 18, and that was in the early 90s. And even then, everybody, all my family and friends smoked, used to go to the pub three nights a week on the weekend, drink loads. I could easily smoke 40 cigarettes in a night. It was just ridiculous. But yeah. I've still got a bad habit. I still use my vape now and again. I can't seem to get quite off that. And I know that's not good for us in terms of the carnivore diet as well, but I'm doing what I can to get through. So.
Yeah, you have to do bridges, right? So when I started the carnivore diet, I bridged with, I didn't do any sweeteners. So the big thing I think that made the difference of the carnivore diet was not eating any processed foods. Because I know on the keto diet there were, and there's a lot of and artificial sweeteners. Cutting out all processed foods and all artificial sweeteners, just going to a whole food diet made the biggest difference for me. Because when I still had sweeteners in the keto diet, I would always get cravings. By 6 p.m. every night, I would start craving sweet stuff. Yeah. And the only way to get rid of it was to cut sweeteners out. Have you cut all sweeteners out of your diet?
Well, pretty much. I have had a few lapses. I tell you, it's what you're seeing there about sweeteners, it is amazing. I was doing really well. And I was at work, I was doing a walk around with some of the bosses and my mouth was drying up. These are like the directors of this airport, quite big, powerful people within the organization. And I said to my coordinator, I says, have you got a mint or something? And she gave us three Tic Tacs. That's all it was. But literally for 2 or 3 days after that, I was getting cravings all the time for something sweet.
Wow.
And also in between then and now, we've had a couple of colleagues have birthdays at work in the office. There's cakes, chocolates everywhere. And I'm not going to lie, there's times I've given. It's weird because you feel like you're breaking the law in some sense. Like afterwards, you feel guilty. Like, what have I done? But One thing that has helped us, and I have mentioned it a few times in my videos, and I'm not using this as an excuse just to forgive me of me sins of sugar, but when you've said, don't let perfection get in the way of excellence, I've actually used that a few times in my videos because it's so right. You can't use the lapse in what you're doing. You can't use that as a way to like, as no, I'm not going to do it anymore. I just can't do it. You know, you've got to just crack on with it. So yeah, I have had about, I'd say, three occasions where I've slipped up. Also right at the beginning as well, during the transition, because I did do like from day one, I went straight into carnivore, but I had a holiday in Amsterdam with my friend. And I must admit, that was it. Well, I was about 2 weeks in then. Yeah. I had some beers then, had a couple of McDonald's breakfasts. So yeah, I'd say in the early days, I wasn't great with it, but I'd say 95% of the time I've been relatively strict.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing of, I call it resilience. Building resilience is not being able to say no all the time. Being resilient is like when you fall off, you jump back up and ride that horse. No one saw you fall off, right? You just get back on and go. And the more you do that, the easier it gets to just snap right back on. And then you do notice things like that, like your cravings coming back. You'll notice that. My son, he's a carnivore too. He's 14 and he did it on his own. I didn't force him or anything. And he ate a burger at a place called Whataburger here in Texas. We were very famous. I used to love it. We used to go there all the time when we were on the standard American diet. And he slipped up and ate a burger. And he told me, he's like, Dad, it didn't even taste as good as I remembered it being. And he's like, it wasn't satisfying. And then on top of that, it jacked his stomach up where he had like digestive issues for a day. He's so young. He has no arthritis. He has none of the stuff I do that I notice stuff right away. When I slip up, I will feel the pain pretty quickly. Yeah. And it's like my body telling me like, that's not good. Don't do that. Right. And for me, that's pretty easy for me to tell. Okay. As far as like your digestive system, what has changed in your digestive system and your hunger signals? Like you brushed on it that you got cravings. Tell us like maybe what you eat in a day, what your digestive cycles change like, and if your hunger signals have changed at all.
Yeah, there's definitely been some changes there. I think we'll start off with what I have to eat. Every morning is pretty much bacon and eggs. I'll have a full pack of smoked back bacon and at least four eggs fried or scrambled in butter. And I don't think I'll ever get bored of that. Every time I have it, it's just amazing. I get it all crispy, beautiful. So I have that. And then I have about two meals a day generally. I can't remember the last time I had three. It must have been right at the beginning. So my second meal would be yesterday I had two rump steaks. I don't know if you call them rump steaks over in America, but I had two of them. Absolutely, I cooked them perfectly. Sometimes I get them wrong, but yesterday I cooked them perfectly. So I enjoyed that. Loads of salt on it. And I keep all the butter and the juices and just pour it over the top. And I eat that off a wooden chopping board. That's what I would like to eat every day, but I find it quite expensive eating steaks all the time. So sometimes I'll have, especially when I'm going to work, I'll take what you would call ground beef, minced beef here over in the UK. But I have had issues with that tasting a bit bland, trying to find ways of spice. I don't know, I know it's not clean, but I've even seen some carnivores chuck a little bit of chili powder in. I've been tempted to do that, or just chuck some cheese in, maybe some scrambled eggs into it, just to try and make it a bit more interesting. But stomach-wise, great. I used to get heartburn now and again. I haven't had that one. I go to the toilet a lot less, sometimes three times a day. Now I'll go, I think, once a day, maybe once every 2 days, and it's not very big. So like shows you most of what I'm eating, is being absorbed into my body. So yeah, that's good. Trying to think stomach-wise. I tell you what, I don't eat them now anyway, but certain things used to give us really bad pains in my stomach. Must have been some kind of intolerance. Peanuts, when I was on the standard Western diet, peanuts would give us agonizing pains in my stomach, like really sharp pains. But on this diet, nothing seems to give us any aches or pains anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen my meatball recipe, but no. I do have a meatball recipe on my channel. I recommend if you like to do minced meat or minced beef. And it's basically, I get a pound of ground beef, which is minced beef, and I put in one egg, and I put in a third of a cup of cheese, grated cheese, cheddar cheese, a third of a cup of, you probably call them pork scratchings. They're basically crushed. We call it pork panko. When you crush it and make it a powder, it's pork panko. So you pour in a third of a cup of that, And that's a binder, and it kind of thickens it. And then you put in a third a cup of bacon bits. So you fry up your bacon, cut it up in small bits, and throw it in, and then make meatballs out of it. And while they're raw, you put them on a tray on like a wax paper or a parchment paper and put it in the freezer and freeze them raw. And then you can just heat them up in the air fryer or the oven. I do an air fryer because I don't know if you have an air fryer, but if you don't,
yeah,
fantastic. So you can throw the meatball in the air fryer and heat it up and then bring them cooked to work as lunch and just cut them in quarters and eat them with your fingers. That's what I do for my son for his grade school, for his lunch. Sometimes he brings those and he loves them. They have a great flavor. The other thing you can do, I do for my burger patties, is I salt and butter them heavily.
Yeah.
Salted butter and salt. And that really makes them better. If you make them thin so they get crispy, and then salt and butter them a lot, that helps a lot.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to try a few things out like that. There's a lot of comments on me latest video that I put out there, giving us suggestions about things I can do with the mince. So yeah, there's definitely ways I can improve that, because I do think on its own with just a bit of salt, it does get a bit bland.
Yeah.
And I'll check that out, because that does sound nice. I did make some sort of scotch eggs, carnivore
scotch. I saw that. I want to do that. I told my son about that. I want to do that. I like scotch eggs.
Yeah, yeah, it was really nice. It wasn't my idea. I had seen somebody else do it. So, yeah, it was really nice.
When I was young, I bartended, and I bartended in a British-style pub over here. They had scotch eggs on the menu. I used to love eating those things. They were made with pork, I think. A pork breakfast pork sausage kind of thing wrapped around them. Very good. That's something I love. Yeah, so that's great. My digestive systems, yeah, so I've had to actually relearn my hunger signals, because when I started on 3 meals a day plus lots of snacks. And because I was emotionally snacking a lot, I work from home, so I would just snack all the time. And when the standard American diet, I was always hungry too, so I would always snack. And so I started out with bacon. I'd fry up a pound of bacon and put it in the fridge and snack on that during the day, and cheese. And then I would eat 3 meals a day. And then I gradually, after about 30 days, I went to 2 to 3 meals a day with less snacking. And then after another 30 days, I was on 1 or 2 meals a day and almost no snacking. And now I snack a couple times a day. It was usually like a bite of butter or something. It's all like pure fat. And then I will eat 1 or 2 times a day. So yeah, it's changed. I would say my hunger signals now, I can totally trust them. If I actually feel hungry, I'm hungry. It's not like an emotional snacking thing. I just need to go get some food. And if I don't feel hungry, I don't. And every now and then I will get an emotional snacking wave pass over me, I think, and then I'll just drink some water and delay for a few minutes and see if I'm still hungry after a few minutes. And if I'm not, it was just a passing phase.
Yeah, I know. I have noticed my hunger signals definitely changed as well. I would get hungry. I used to have to eat every 4 or 5 hours when I was awake on a standard Western diet. It'd be quite like, that would be like a meal every 4 or 5 hours I'd have to have. So I'd have my breakfast, my lunch, my dinner, and I'd have a supper. So yeah, I think at first I found it harder to know when I was hungry. Like, I didn't feel that hungry at all. I'd have me bacon and eggs in the morning, and then I would be like, I don't really feel like I should eat anything. But I yet more because the videos that I'd seen had said, eat as much as you can, as much fatty meat. Don't worry about portion size. So I just felt like I had to eat more. But now two meals, they're not even massive meals. I'm fine. And I try and get in about 16 hours fast if I can, between the last one and the first one. So yeah, it changes. It takes a bit getting used to, but yeah, I think I'm sorted now.
I think the nutrient density of the food we're eating is so different that when you first go on it, you think, oh my gosh, this is going to be so expensive for me to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. But then you start eating so much less food, and you're not buying ingredients. You're not buying all these sides. You're not throwing food away. I barely generate trash now. My trash is, you're single like me probably, right? I assume by the way.
No, yeah. Well, it's a complicated one. I've got a partner that I live with, but we're not together anymore. So we're here looking after the kids. She's got one, like I say, due in December as well. It's a bit of a complicated situation, but yeah.
But you're carnivore alone?
Yes, I'm carnivore alone. My sort of ex-partner, she is standard Western diet. Even my daughter, she's 2 and a half. She eats a lot of rubbish, and I hate saying it, but yeah, it's difficult. She's a very fussy eater. I've mentioned this before, one of my videos before as well. I'd love to get her into a more animal-based diet. But yeah, there's chocolate everywhere in the house. There's crisps, snacks, everything that I used to eat, everywhere.
That can't be easy.
No, it's not. I do find it. What's the most difficult thing is like knowing that if they could switch over, it would improve their lives so much. But you can't. One thing I've noticed is you can't like push it onto people too much. They just want. They need to be ready to accept it, and not everybody's got that in them yet.
Yeah, you have to have a why, and the why has to be big. It can't just be, I want to lose weight for a wedding, or I want to lose 15 pounds, go to the beach or whatever. It can't be like that. It has to be significant enough that you're going to change your life, because it's a pretty radical change. But when you do it, you don't have to guess whether it's working. It's pretty immediate, right? I mean, yeah. I noticed in the first 2 weeks, wow, things are changing fast.
Yeah.
And I was losing weight rapidly. My mental acuity was better. My energy levels were already rising, and then once they rose, they just steadied out, and now all day long my energy is like perfect. I call it carnivore zen. It's like just sitting there like, all right, we can just do whatever we want.
It's amazing, and to me another thing that's amazing is how it took us so long to get this knowledge. Like 46 year old, you're in your 50s. How as humans have we not figured this out a long time ago? I mean, I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist, so I've got lots of opinions that can't go too in-depth in them, because people think I'm mental. But I honestly do believe that a lot of it's kept from us. They don't want us to be healthy. You know?
So after retiring from the military, I saw a lot of stuff where I started questioning a lot more of our government, because I saw how the government behaved overseas in military operations, and who was getting paid to do what. And that seemed more important than what our real mission was. When you see Raytheon and General Dynamics and these huge contracts getting paid forever and now you see the war in Ukraine. So you see the people are making money. If you follow the money, it kind of shows you what's going on and why decisions are getting made that don't make logical sense. It's like, okay, we killed Osama bin Laden, so why are we still in Afghanistan? What's the tactical and, you know, what's the significance of Afghanistan, right? And there's no good answer other than people are getting paid to be there. And then you see the Food and Drug Administration, and I'm sure there's some kind of administration in England might be similar, but we have a government agency that regulates both food and drugs getting paid by the food and drug companies.
Yeah.
So they're acting in their best interest, obviously. And their best interest is to make addictive foods that will keep us alive and not kill us, and put us sick enough that the drug companies can make these great drugs like Ozempic and these statins and these RSSIs, all these antidepressants. So they're going to make us just sick enough where we're not going to die, but we need these drugs, and we're going to be lifetime subscribers to these drugs. So you get on a statin, it's lifetime subscription.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of customer they like. So this, I don't think that is a conspiracy theory. I think that's a proven fact. But when you're getting fed by news outlets that are paid by these companies as well to put out their narrative, you're getting a certain narrative that covers what they believe. And I'm right there with you. My experience is from my experience, and you can say you have a different opinion, but you can't say I'm wrong, because I know what I've seen, and I'm sure you the same thing. And the fact that it's every Western country is the same way. And you go to the Eastern countries and they're not quite that way. There's a different, they have their own control problems and control messages, but it's a different spin. Western countries, we're like all lockstep.
Yeah, and everything's in place for us as well from being kids. So you've got your birthdays. We eat lots of cakes, chocolates, and sweets. You've got your Christmas. You've got your Halloween. You've got Easter, chocolate eggs everywhere. Like, it's a constant feed of sugar. Mm-hmm. That's where the money is, the sugar and the pharmaceuticals. So the two combined working together, they've got that much money. They can pay governments to say whatever they want. They can pay. I know Dr. Shafi's mentioned it before about Harvard professors being paid to say this and say that. And I do believe that's all part of it. 100%.
There's I don't know if you've seen, I have a documentary playlist where I do movie reviews for documentaries that are available on YouTube for free and on Tubi, which is an app. I don't know if they're available in Europe. I imagine the YouTube ones are, but there's a great documentary called That Sugar Film, which is fantastic. It's an Australian guy who deep dives into the sugar industry, and that's really a good one. And also puts himself on from a whole food diet to a sugar-based diet, but he is only eating the recommended allowance of sugar that the Australian Health Administration, whatever they are, says you should eat. And his rules are he can only eat sugars that are hidden in healthy foods. So yogurts, cereals, milks, these kind of things. And he starts doing, I think it's 20 tablespoons a day of sugar is what the recommended daily allowance in Australia is. And in America, it's even worse. I think it was like 40. It was crazy. So he starts out in Australia and he puts on all this weight, gets a fatty liver like in 30 or 60 days. As fast as we saw the results going to carnivore from a standard diet, he saw that going the other way. It's that fast. Yeah. And that was amazing to me because I'd never seen that before. I've never seen someone from a whole food diet switch over. And it was great to watch. And then at the end of the movie, he switches back. And the results are just as fast. But now he was not eating a carnivore diet. He was eating more of a keto diet, a whole food diet, natural. Yeah. And that's fine. I think cutting out processed food, seed oil, sugar, and refined wheat is 95% of the problem. If you do that, you're pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, totally agree. I mean, even vegans, I've spoke to some vegans. I like to watch content that sort of conflicts with my own in a way as well. And vegans are doing, they're doing the same thing in the sense that they're trying to find a way from getting out of this high sugar, high carb, better health, better lifestyle. I don't want to be like in arguments with them. I can see why they're doing it. I just think they maybe don't appreciate or understand fully what the carnivore diet can do yet. I've seen on YouTube some vegans that have switched over to carnivore and they've noticed a massive improvement. But yeah, these even fruits and vegetables have got, like especially fruits, have got a lot of sugar in them. So I was never a big fan of fruit and veg anyway, even on the standard Western diet. I was more of a junk food man, like pizzas, kebabs and pies, pasties, anything with pastry, cakes and chocolate, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen Maggie White, the 83-year-old rancher from Canada.
Yes, amazing.
She's pretty amazing. She talks about growing up in the 40s. And in Canada, it was so back then in the 40s, 50s, even the 60s, you had fruit that was seasonal to your region. That's all you had. Mm-hmm. There was none of this, hey, we got bananas in Michigan in the middle of winter, which we have now, right? Yeah. And the fruit was not genetically modified to be sweeter because it was pretty local, natural stuff. So she said the apples they had were like cran apples and up in Canada. She's way up north. So she had very little fruit to pick from, and she didn't like any of it, so she never ate any. And that makes sense. You look at the Inuit, which are the Eskimos who live up in the Arctic Circle. They don't eat any fruit. If they do, it's very little and some very few berries. And it's a secondary food when they can't find real food. The real food is going to be, it's going to be the antelope that they have up there, caribou, they call it, or it'll be a seal or fish. That's the real food. And they eat that whenever they can. And they eat that. And if they're, occasionally they'll get berries and stuff, but it's not like hunting, gathering is not meaning you're eating berries every day for the whole year or even weekly. You're eating it just in season and it's not as sweet, so it doesn't taste as good. Yeah. I think some of the things they've done, they've re-engineered foods. I don't know if you've seen my video on McDonald's French fries and the 14 ingredients in a McDonald's French fry. But when I grew up in the 70s and the 60s, French fries were made from potatoes that you cut and fried in lard and put salt on it. And that was three ingredients. That's all it was. Now there's 14 ingredients in a dang French fry at McDonald's and they're designed. And the sugar film talks about finding the bliss point. And these guys have designed these to have a bliss point. As a result, they're highly addictive and they are the number one selling item that McDonald's sells is French fries. It's the number one seller out of all their items.
Yeah, that is crazy.
It can't be cheaper and easier to make a 14 ingredient French fry. It's got to be infinitely harder and more expensive.
It's more profitable, isn't it?
More profitable. That's it. See, these are engineered. These foods, there's nothing in nature that naturally occurs, unless, correct me if I'm wrong, no one's ever told me this, that is both sweet and salty at the same time and available for us to eat. And that is what creates that bliss point. So this is everything that's sweet and salty, and you see it everywhere. You see these popcorns that have salt and caramel, and you see all these sweet, salty combinations. And some are hidden, and some are right out front, but they actually do create this addictiveness. And then you add in seed oils. If you fry in a seed oil instead of lard, it's more addictive as well. If you get carbohydrates fried in seed oils, add to the addiction. So it's really crazy and super poisonous.
Yeah, it's strange. I noticed the other day as well, I was wanting to get some sausages from my local supermarket and every single pack had sugar in it. And I'm like,
dextrose.
Yeah, yeah, and sugar. And I'm like, I can understand the preservative side of it maybe, but it's, I don't want sausages with sugar in it. You know what I mean? So I just couldn't buy any. I did end up going to the butchers and got some better quality ones, but why? I just can't see why it needs to have that much sugar.
Yeah,
in it.
I think I commented on that. I think what some of the things they are is when it browns, the sugar will brown, and they do like that. So when you fry it up, a patty, and it browns up, that's a lot of times that sugar caramelizing. And then it is, again, it'll basically preserve it. So the dextrose is a preservative, so it has a longer shelf life. Anything that has a long shelf life is modified, right? And that's what you got to kind of stay away from. So I tell people when they do carnivore, for me, when I go grocery shopping now, I speed walk through those aisles, or I just bypass them and go to the outside and hit the meat aisle, the dairy aisle, and that's all I hit. And then unless I'm buying like Ziploc bags or toilet paper or something, that's the only other thing. I'd never even go to those other aisles. What's the shopping experience like for you now?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty much the same. I've always walked straight through the fruit and veg aisle. Like I say, I was never a fan of it. And it goes to show most kids don't want it. I know for a fact when I was a kid, I was forced to sit at the table for ages trying to get the vegetables down. It's like something as a kid I realized it was something that I shouldn't be eating. But when I go through the supermarket now, it is straight, because the way it's designed, you've got the fruit and the veg, and the other side of it, you've got the meat. So I walk straight through, I go down the meat aisle, and unless I'm getting something for a member of the family, I go straight from there to the water aisle and then to the till. The one thing that I do, what I've noticed I do more of in the supermarket now, is I look at other people. Like, I look in their shopping trolley. Yeah. I look at their bellies. I look at see what kind of health they are.
Yeah, me too.
And sometimes you see them like struggling and that, and you look what they've got in the, you want to see something, but obviously you can't, but you just feel like saying, look, if you did this, it would improve so many aspects of your life. But they would just look at you like you were a nutcase if you started seeing things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things I've noticed, but I do find it much more enjoyable experience. I'm in, out, you know, a couple of bags worth, and that's it.
Yeah, me too. I'm always in, we have the express checkout that's 15 items or less. I'm always there, or the self checkout. Because I always have 10 to 15 items. I never have a full basket like I used to have.
Yeah.
And I get it. When I go shopping, I look around and I just think metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome. You just look around and you're like, oh my gosh, these people are just so sick.
Yeah.
Globally, yeah. Including kids. Now, when I grew up, we had one or two fat kids in our class. We didn't have 70% of the kids. Now I watch soccer games with my son, and there's kids on teams playing soccer that are obese. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case when I was a kid. If you were an athlete, especially, there were no fat athletes we had. None. Not one. They were all like twigs in grade school and middle school.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of two things. I think obviously the diet is a massive, probably the biggest part. But not only that, when we were kids, we weren't in the house on computer games for hours on end. We were out, I was jumping over streams, making swing bridges, out on my bikes. I was just active all the time doing something. And you don't see that as much, anywhere near as much these days in this country, especially. I know there's a lot of, I used to be out on the streets when I was like 5-6 year old with my friends, no adults about. My mum was just like, stay within shouting distance. And then once it got dark, I would come in. I know you've got the aspect of worrying about kids being abducted and paedophiles and all that sort of stuff now, which seems to be more prolific, but I don't know if it is more prolific or we just know more about it these days. Yeah. I don't know. So there's that, the lack of exercise and the food combined is making so many obese kids all over the world, especially the Western world, I think. It's a shame because if they're like that now, what are they going to be like when they get to the 40s, 50s and 60s if they get there?
Yeah, you see these doctors talking about having kids with type 2 diabetes, which never was unheard of, right? Unheard of. And even young adults with type 2 diabetes, it's crazy. If someone tells you have type 2 diabetes, and then, of course, their answer is just shoot yourself up with insulin, because that's what the drug companies teach doctors now, because they basically run the medical schools. It's ridiculous. It's, wow, that's the answer? So we're going to treat symptoms forever and never cure the problem. And that's what my issue is when my mother was alive, she was on antidepressants. And I'm like, okay, when she told me she was on them, I'm like, okay, so what's the plan? What's the condition they're going to correct to get you off these? And there was none. This was a lifetime. You're just going to be on antidepressants the rest of your life. That is not medicine. That is treating a symptom forever. and never correcting the issue, because you weren't depressed when you start before you started them. So you got depressed. So what caused that? And let's fix that. Of course, I really believe that. I don't know if you saw my post recently, but I talked the post I put up about low cholesterol and brain function and suicide and depression and mental health. But there is a clear correlation, and we know correlation doesn't mean causation, but when you have enough data points, you start getting a theory. And there's, and the NIH here in America, National Institute of Health, has published these reports from the 90s pointing to low cholesterol in our system causing people having mental and cognitive dysfunction. And that's the thing I point to when we jump on carnivore, you start adding all this fat to our diet, all of a sudden brain function is one of the first things that happens. Like right away, it's like a light switch going on. So to me, in my personal experience, I'm thinking, I know it's anecdotal, but man, that makes a huge difference. And if we could help people turn the corner on their mental health and then get things squared, just think about our whole society. If we were all firing on all cylinders like this and less violent, because they proved that people that committed suicide in a violent act rather than a passive act, like taking drugs, people that shoot themselves or jump off bridges or whatever, they have overwhelmingly low cholesterol, which is very interesting, right?
Yeah.
That's not epidemiological. That's a physical data point. So it's not someone's opinion. It's just the way it is. And that kind of tells you a lot. So I think that switching this diet, a lot of things point to this diet to being the answer for a better society, a better life for individuals. It's so hard to see. And I felt guilty like you. So I had my son, I raised him on the standard American diet until he decided at 14 to switch. And he's got braces. He's got all these things. And I wonder, it's like, if I had fed him properly, would he have needed braces? Would he have evolved that jaw? Would that jaw have grown out better? Would any of these issues that he had that I saw be better? Like now he doesn't have acne. What 14-year-old kid doesn't have acne, right?
Yeah.
A kid that does carnivore diet doesn't have acne, because I used to buy him all the acne stuff. And now it just sits in the cabinet and he doesn't use it. It's pretty awesome.
Excellent. Yeah, it should be common sense when you think about it. Like I used the analogy, and I've heard other people use the analogy of a vehicle. Like if you don't change the oil, if you don't put the water in, if you don't refuel it, if you don't check this, the stuff that goes into the vehicle is what keeps it working for longer. And it's not, we're no different in the sense we're not mechanical metal bits moving around, but we need the right fuel. And if we don't get it, we don't put in the right stuff, then we're going to have breakdowns as well, mentally and physically.
Yeah, we're actually biochemical engines, right? And everyone wants to talk about calories in, calories out, working out and eating calories. And that's a physics problem, but we're a biochemistry engine. We're not a physics engine, right? It's because wood has calories in it.
Yeah.
And so does leather. And you can't eat that and live, right? So you can burn it and it makes calories, because calories is an energy measurement. So calories in, calories out is a terrible idea. Biochemistry talks about what does this food substance, this gram of food, these carbohydrates, how are they treated by your body and how are they changed and what do they do? A protein versus a fat, amino acid, carbohydrate, how your body reacts to a type of food is much more important. And I, like you, I talk about a drag racer, these cars that run on top fuel and go down the 300 miles an hour down the strip. If you get one of those drag racers and you put in unleaded regular gas in it, it'll probably run and it'll go probably the whole distance if you try to drive it down there, but it won't be fast. It won't run properly. It'll be backfiring and it'll probably ruin the engine by the time you get to the end of the race. But if you put the right fuel in, that thing will just propel down like a rocket. And I think we are like drag cars. We're like these drag racers ready to go, and we're putting this terrible fuel in it. And it's damaging the engine and slowing us down. That's my
opinion. That's a good way to put it. It's exactly right, I think, to be honest with you. The fuel is the most important thing. And the hydration, I know people talk about, they're concerned about, are we getting enough electrolytes or certain vitamins? But I've never really had any issues. I've had some slight headaches. It's interesting. One of the guys on my latest video, I got loads of comments and I was really thankful. Because I have suffered from a few, like what I've been calling keto headaches. And he said, he mentioned about drinking too much water. Now, he used to drink 4 liters of water a day and he used to get headaches. He cut it down to 2 liters a day and it stopped. So this, I only discovered this a couple of days ago, so I am going to just maybe cut my water intake down. I don't know whether it's rubbish or not, but if it's worked for him, I thought I'd give it a try. I don't get them all the time, but I'd say at least once a week I'm getting them. So I'm going to give that maybe cut. Do you think that's a good idea, cutting down from, because I am drinking about, I can't have about four of these a day.
Yeah, you could taper it back. You don't have to cut in half. You could just like taper it back and say, I'm going to drop to three a day and see what it does.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt. You, like you said, this is an N equals one experiment, right? Your own body's different than mine.
Yeah.
So you can drink your water, and then it depends on your physical activity too. I'm not super active. And that's the other great thing in this. I've not done a lot of exercise and had great physical benefits. Put on muscle, not exercising, which is crazy to me, right?
Yeah. So have you had, I can be sitting there and I can feel my muscles like twitching in my arm, like
pulsing. You feel more firm. I feel firm in places I wasn't as firm. Yeah. And it's just like muscles coming on, fats going away. Bone density is increasing. I do a little exercise, but not like you, not a lot. I don't go to the gym. I have no membership.
No.
Most of my exercise, most of it is walking. And I do get some steps in. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. This is it's a life-changing thing. It really has completely changed my life and probably changed the trajectory of my life. Let's go into your YouTube channel a little bit. Let's talk about that. Why would you start a YouTube channel? Have you always wanted to be a YouTuber?
Yeah, it's something I've been interested in for a long time. I've had a few channels, to be honest with you, over the years. I created, the first one was just a little, it was all different pranks and silly skits and stuff like that. I did that when I was early 20s. It did all right. I got partnership with YouTube at the time. I think the channel's still there, but the videos aren't on it. I think I got about 1,600 subscribers on it. So I did that for a little while. And then I created a soccer YouTube channel. I got that up to about 4,500 subscribers. But that was just taking up so much time because I couldn't, with a sports YouTube channel, you have to constantly be looking at what's happening, going to the games, if you can get to the games thing. And I live so far away from the team that I support, it just became too much. So I handed that over to one of the colleagues that was working on it with us. So I did that. And then I just had a little break from it. And then when I started Carnivore, I thought it would be the ideal way to, even if nobody watched it, it was a good way to document my own journey on it, a bit like a video diary. I could look back and think about what did I do in the early days on week one, week two, week three. And obviously, if you get subscribers, it's a bonus. I don't think anybody would want to create a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And not have people watch it, unless it purely is just for yourself and you could have them all as private. No, I do. I'm happy with the YouTube channel. I created it around the 20th of August. I've got about 350 something subscribers. But what's good is the views are getting sometimes four times the views compared to the subscribers. So that's always a good gauge of how good the content is, I believe. I would love them, or every single one, to subscribe. I think getting the message out is the most important thing. And I think that's the biggest reason a lot of YouTubers will do it, is to spread it out so everybody can benefit from this way of life. You know what I mean? We can tell your parents. I've spoken to my parents, my brothers, my sisters, my sister-in-law about it. My sister-in-law has done it. She did it for about 6 weeks, and she lost over a stone. She was, for that reason that you mentioned earlier on, she was going on holiday, so she wanted to lose weight. But since then, she's come back and she says she wants to keep doing it. My brother struggled with it for a little bit. He's tempted to go back on it, but my dad wasn't interested, and he's on statins as well.
Yeah.
My mother was struggling with it. But yeah, the YouTube thing, I really enjoy it. I enjoy communicating with other people. I like to have my own little community there, getting involved with the other channels like we're doing here. You just learn so much from other people. Like I say, if I'm struggling with the mince or something else with it, I can put a video out and I can get loads of comments. And then I can do something about it. So it's not just, it's a bit selfish, really. It's mainly for me to help me get through it.
Yeah, it's really rewarding. Excuse me. It's really rewarding when people jump on and they thank you. And it's like humbling. I was just doing it to get the message out because I had I'd talked to my neighbors and my friends, and a lot of them had gone carnivore and then they changed their lives. And then they started telling other people that I didn't even know and changing those lives. And I thought, wow, that's a cool ripple effect. I wonder if a YouTube channel would make it better. And I wish I had started on week one, like you did, or the beginning of my carnivore journey. I didn't start. I started carnivore on March 22nd and didn't start a YouTube channel until August 7th.
Yeah.
So it was I was well underway. But what it did allow me to do was, even though I wasn't good at being on YouTube, because I was my first videos are pretty stiff before I relaxed in front of the camera and got used to speaking to nobody. It's a weird thing. But once you get going, I had the experience of being a pretty experienced carnivore and seeing real results for extended time that I could speak from a position of, okay, this works, and I could be an authority on it because I've done it and I've seen neighbors and other people do it. So it's an easy way to, I do love having a YouTube channel, and my favorite part of the day is either doing interviews like this where I can talk to other carnivores and we can share experiences, or it's answering messages, which I try to answer every message and email I get. I know at one point I won't be able to, but for now I'm doing every one of them. I read them all. Yeah. Try to answer them, and I enjoy connecting with people. And to me, it reminds me of when I was a platoon leader and I had my soldiers, and I call my platoon members. I say, hey, welcome to the platoon, because I feel like I've got a great connection with them. We're all in the military. We have a brotherhood. You did some training. You understand, because when you're with other people that go through that same thing, you develop a brotherhood because you're going through the same, we call it embracing the suck. You're going through the same hardship together and paying the same price together, taking the same risks together. And in this diet, you pay the same price together. So even though your experience is a little different than mine, but we've gone through enough of the same things that we can respect each other as, hey, this guy's a carnivore. He knows, he gets it, right? He knows what this is all about.
Yeah. Yeah, there is this sort of connection. Even when you just, first time you speak to somebody, like this is the first time I support you, there's the connection of we're both going through the same thing. And that is another reason why I wanted to do the YouTube channel, because when I started researching this, it seemed to be all in America. There was very little content I could find over here, and I wanted to build it over here. I wanted to try and build the UK community a little bit more, because it just seems the Americans I don't know whether it's just because that's what I'm watching. I don't know. You can tell me if it's still a rare thing over there or not, but it seems very rare over here. Like, a lot of people will think, if I tell them I'm on the carnivore diet, they'll say, oh, you mean like the Atkins diet or a low-carb diet? They haven't really fully heard or understand the carnivore diet yet. So, like, I wanted to try and get the word out around this country as well. So that was one reason I pushed it, and that's why the channel was called the UK Carnivore Guy. But, yeah, what is it like? Can you see it growing quickly at the moment? Yeah.
It's going to the point where now when I'm single, so I've gone on dates and stuff, and I've said, I only eat meat, and they go, oh, like a carnivore diet? So they know, and they're not on it, and I know. Or I tell them I'm a carnivore, and they get that, okay, that means you just eat meat. So a lot of people just know what that is now, which it's at least in my age group. It's not everyone gets it, but there's definitely more people. And I think it has to do with YouTube's algorithm, because YouTube will advertise to Americans because we are the biggest market of So when there's a paid for advertisement, it's going to get marketed to us first. And then the UK, Australia, Germany, these, you know, the places that are big markets, right? Europe in general. But so I think that's why you see more Americans. And then because of that, we have more content creators, so we get exposed to it more, I think, because we're the biggest advertising market. So I don't know about you, but when I first saw, I didn't see Jordan Peterson first. I'm a Jeep driver. I go off-roading in my Jeep and I enjoy it. And I was looking how to put a part on my Jeep, and I saw this Dante Fregno video pop up, and I was 280 pounds, feeling miserable. And every other diet I've done from YouTube. I've basically learned about it and tried it. And I thought, well, I've done everything else. This looks like it worked for him. So I watched the video, and I don't know if you've seen his, but Fregno Freedom, he did Lion Diet for 236 days, I think.
Yeah.
So I watched him. And I was like, wow, that's transformative. And then I thought, well, that's like a 4-year-old video. So obviously he's back, you know, he's done. That was it. That was a one-time shot. And I looked at a recent video and he actually looked better than he did when he started. And I was like, wow. And this is years later. So I thought, and the other thing is, the guy's not a nutritionist. He's not selling a program. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to look into this. And then I found Dr. Barry. And then I found Joe Rogan. And Dr. Barry, I'd watched when he was keto, because he wasn't carnivore before. He was keto.
Yeah.
Started out keto for a long time. So I was like, when I was doing keto back in the Army, way back in like 17 and 16, he was doing that. And I was watching his videos. And now he's carnivore. I'm like, well, if he converted to carnivore, this must be legit, because I know that guy is legit. So I started doing that. went down that rabbit hole, and that's what got me into that. What are your goals for your YouTube channel? Like, I know it's new for you. You've done YouTube channels in the past. What would you like? What would be a successful channel to you?
I think for me, it's just building the community. I'm not worried about, like I said before, it's nice to get subscribers and comments and likes and things. That is part of it. Definitely, I'd be a liar if I said that I'm not interested in any of that. But for me, it is building the community here in the UK and trying to grow my own knowledge and get my own knowledge out there. So when people in the UK maybe do a YouTube search for UK carnivores, that I'm there and I can offer people advice. If it's a year or two down the line and they're just starting out, being able to help people's lives dramatically change on this, even if it's just in a small way so that they maybe get to hear about it, then for me, that's the only reason that I'm doing it. So yeah, to grow my audience, that is one goal, grow as quickly as I can and just spread the word. That's all it is.
I think you've actually found some friends there too, some compatriots, right? You've actually connected with other carnivores in the UK. Has that been a big part of your channel?
Yes, there's a guy called Carnivore Cabby.
Oh, Mike?
Yes,
I know Mike. Yeah, we're doing him next. He's up next.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think he used to be called the English Carnivore, and then he changed everything onto another channel, the Carnivore Cabby. And
right.
Yeah, he's a good lad. I find him quite funny. Even without him trying to be funny, I do find him quite funny. And he's posting a lot of the things that he's cooking on his YouTube channel. I just find him interesting. So he's definitely worth a watch. I've connected with him. And I've watched a lot of other YouTubers in the UK, but not really connected. I started talking to, just briefly, via comments on YouTube, is Kent Carnivore, I think he's called.
Oh, okay. I haven't talked to him yet.
Yeah, he's got quite a big following, actually. I'm sure he's called the Kent Carnivore. I can't remember his exact name, but his content's good. So yeah, there's a few of us creeping up, popping up there. But yeah, like I said, building up the community is a big thing. And then I reckon we'll get there. I reckon we'll slowly start catching up to the Americans at one
point. Have you talked to Carl? Yeah, Carl from Carnivore Nation?
No, I haven't. I've spoke to another one I forgot to mention, actually. Alex for Carnivore for Life, I think he's called.
Right.
Yeah, he's the 65-year-old. I did a live stream on his channel with Mike.
Yeah, he has the big glasses, right? The big
Yes.
smart glasses. Yeah, I know him. Yeah.
I spoke to him. I was on a live stream with him. He's done so well. He still has alcohol on a weekend. He still has a few beers and he's lost like loads of weight, feeling so much better. So I think I'd love to be one of these people that could moderate things better like that when it comes to beers or food, but I don't think I'm the kind of guy that could do it. So yeah, there's a few of us, we're getting there, but to grow that community is massively important here, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. And because this is the only, YouTube has its faults, but it is the only way we're going to get a grassroots message out, because the paid for media will never put this information out. And whether it's print or video, it'll never put this message out. So we have to be the advocates, carry the torch, and get this message out to as many people as we can. So that's my goal too. And my channel focuses primarily on first responders and veterans, because I know we have a higher than average suicide rate. And I think it's due to the conditions of life that cause people to take their lives hasn't changed. It's typically when you have a suicide, you find that it was relationship, it was financial, it was legal issues. Those are the issues that tip people over. But the fulcrum has changed and made it easier for them to make that choice, I think. And that was the standard diet, the standard Western diet that has lowered our cholesterol, made people take violent actions more impulsively, because that's another thing. Impulsive actions is part of having low cholesterol too. So there's all these pointers that mark up. It's okay. So the same stresses are there, but now when people are committing suicide earlier and faster and in terrible ways. And I think a lot of it, this is actually a tool we can use. So that's my goal, is if I can save one person, if one person's life is turned around, then that's 100%. I made it. That's my goal. But I know it'll do more than that. I do. I have a feeling. And not just prevent suicide, but actually just turn their lives around and make a better life. So
exactly. It makes you feel like it's a bit of a responsibility. You've got this knowledge. It's your responsibility to get it out there and help people. If you, like I say, you can't just walk into the supermarket and start telling people that they should be doing this, but like through a YouTube channel, they're obviously searching for it, or it's recommended to them via something else that they've watched. You put the tags in health, good food, carnivore, that for some reason gets shown on there. Most of my views come through the browse feature or the recommended feature on their channels. So they're obviously must be interested at least in what I'm talking about. But yeah, I think that is a brilliant way of getting it out there to people. There was something I was going to mention there. I can't remember what it was now. It's gone. There was something.
That's all right. It may come back. It's interesting you talk about responsibilities. I'm a Texan and an American, and I carry a sidearm where I go. And I saw a video a long time ago that it was interesting. It said that if you are trained and capable and legally allowed to carry a sidearm, you have a responsibility to do that. You have we call it the responsibility of concealed carry. Because you can, you should, because if a bad actor starts something near you, you need to be able to stop it. And if you dial 911, they may take 20 minutes to get there. It's all over by the time they get there. And I know I worked in law enforcement, and the number of crimes that are intervened while they're going on by police is very low, especially violent crimes, home invasions, rapes. This is all it's usually after the fact you get there and collect evidence and do the. There is a responsibility to being educated and trained. And I think that carries over, not just to like in Texas where I carry a gun, but it goes into carnivore. Like we are the trained people that have actually applied it and know what we're talking about. We actually have facts and not feelings. Yeah. And that's something that you talked about talking to vegans and fighting with them. I do notice that this community is much more open. If a vegan came into my channel, I'd welcome them. Hey man, let's talk about it. On the other side, people I've talked to that are vegans that have switched over tell me about how militant their groups are. They're very, because I think their reasons for being vegan, although misguided, are very much, we don't want to kill animals, and it's different. We're optimizing health. We're not, or we want to save the planet, even though that's misguided because they are killing billions of animals when they're harvesting wheat, and they're destroying the planet with these oat milk factories and stuff, worse than cows can ever do, right? It's amazing, but because that's their feeling-based argument, it's really hard to, they're very militant because they're structured around feelings. We're structured completely around facts, logic, critical thinking, and that's why Jordan Peterson, he's going to make a critical thinking argument of facts and logic and no feelings involved at all.
That's exactly, you've actually just brought back what I was wanting to say. When I'm on my YouTube videos as well, you're talking about facts. I'm worried about saying something that's not accurate. I might have already done so because you hear that different, even the doctors have varying opinions on certain things, trying to kill you or just different takes on it. So I'm cautious about what I say. Like I try not to give any kind of medical advice happening for me, but I think there might have been times I've said something that maybe could be taken the wrong way or is not quite accurate. So that's one thing I have to be careful about. But yeah, facts. I think what you just talked about, again, the vegans, I had a conversation a couple of days ago on the Twitter about that very thing. She said something along the lines of, I don't believe in the exploitation of animals for commodities or something along them lines. And I was like, what, all animals or just the ones, the big ones that eat the grass in the field? Are you talking about little ones that get killed in the crop harvesting?
Yeah.
So she didn't really have an answer to it. But I just think they're not quite seeing it. I know there's a lot of them all, a lot of these vegans are also into the environmental issues that cows farting and things that, which I don't really believe has any impact whatsoever. No,
it's a false narrative. So when we came to the New World here in America, there were 160 million buffalo roaming the plains, right?
Yeah.
And now we've replaced them with cattle. So we haven't done anything, and there's fewer. They're not in, I don't think there's 160 million cattle here, but this was the natural way of things. And we didn't have global warming.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
Buffalo are not magical animals that don't have gas.
Talking about gas, that is another thing. Has that changed for you? Yeah. I definitely don't do it as much.
There's no gas. Yeah. Very little. And if it does, it doesn't stink at all.
Yeah.
At all. And even when I go to the bathroom, it rarely stinks at all. There's no fermentation going on. Yeah. You break down. And so here's the thing. My dog is a Great Dane. He's 130 pounds. He used to have massive legendary craps that were just huge. I had a shovel. I still have it in the backyard to pick these up because it was like a human crap. It was huge when he was on kibble. Now that he's eating raw chicken, he's on a PMR diet, which is a primary model raw. So it's a predator model raw. And it's basically raw chicken. I grind it up, give him the bones and everything. His turds are like that big.
Yeah.
And they're hard. And they have a lot of bone in them. They turn white in the sun from the calcium. So they're easy to find. if you step on one, it won't stick to your shoe. It's like stepping on a rock. It's like stepping on, it's crazy. And so it, for one thing, if you have dogs, it'll make them super healthy. Also, picking up their waste is super easy. It's not gross anymore. I can get a bag and just pick it up, and it's like picking up a couple of stones in the yard. It's so nice. And it's cheaper. I save by grinding chicken. I am saving about $40 a month. And yeah, I was spending between 80 and 100 a month. And now I'm spending between 40 and 60 a month on his food. So it's much cheaper. It just takes some time. You have to spend some hours. But anyway, okay, we're running out of time. We're over. But tell us how people can find you. I know this is your YouTube channel, correct? UK Carnivore Guy?
Yeah, UK Carnivore Guy on YouTube. I have got an Instagram account. I post little bits up on there sometimes what I'm eating. I posted my blood pressure results up on there. So yeah, I'm on there a little bit. X, or Twitter as it used to be known. I'm on there a little bit, but I don't have many people on there. I think five people. I follow five. They five follow people back.
They follow me. I'll follow you back.
Yeah, I will too.
Carnivore Soldier. And you are UK Carnivore Guy on both Twitter and Instagram, correct?
Instagram. Yeah, it's on all platforms. I've managed to get it. UK Carnivore Guy. So if anybody's interested in following how carnivore goes in the UK or just supporting us and give us a few comments, that'd be fantastic.
Cool. Well, I'm going to drop you out of the video, say goodbye to the audience, and then stick around. We'll talk for a minute when we get done here, okay?
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Subscribe to Carnivore Soldier if you haven't already done so, and thanks for watching.
All right, thanks. Cheers. All right, guys, that was another great episode of Mission Carnivore. I'm sorry. That was another great episode of The Carnivore Way. And if you like my content, please like and subscribe to the video. Also, all I have to say now is stay strong and overcome. Carnivore Soldier out.